Good afternoon and welcome to Living Permaculture on KDNK. I'm Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. I've had a few plant nursery and horticulture mentors. The first to mention is my co-host, Jerome Osentowski of Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute in Basalt, Colorado, who first taught me about clonal fruit tree propagation by grafting and got me started in the plant nursery trade. A few years ago, when I was hunting for sources of cold, hardy fruit tree propagation material called scion wood, I came across the website for Purvis Nursery and Orchard in Homedale, Idaho. I called Robert Purvis, and we spent a good hour talking about fruit trees, fellow fruit growers, soil nutrients, and climate. Since then, Robert, or Bob, has been a source for me of scion wood, rootstock, and mentorship by phone and email. Bob Purvis earned his Master's of Science in Horticulture from Washington State University. He spent his earlier career working in roles as an industry horticulturist and as a USDA agricultural statistician. During those times, he gained experience growing fruit in Minnesota, Washington State, and Alaska. In 2007, Bob moved to Idaho and opened Purvis Nursery and Orchard in 2008. The purpose of his nursery is to graft, grow, and sell trees of hard-to-find fruit cultivars, primarily apricot, but also apple, pear, plum, and cherry, that will survive and ripen in USDA zones 2 to 6. In fact, this spring, Bob sent me 45 different cultivars by mail order. His orchard of approximately 1.5 acres is being used as a germplasm repository for fruit cultivars for the North Country and Western Mountain states. Since 1985, he has taught grafting and pruning classes for the general public. He offers orchard consulting for homeowners and top grafting for commercial growers, where he grafts new varieties onto established fruit trees. He sells fruit to the general public, concentrating on cultivars introduced by the University of Minnesota, the USDA Agricultural Research Service, and the New Jersey Apricot Breeding Program, rather than the more commonly available commercial cultivars. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, through this show today's and through this show in general, I hope to inspire people to pursue careers in agriculture and horticulture. What is it that drew you to those fields, Bob?
Well, I grew up around fruit trees at my home in Havertown, Pennsylvania, a suburb of Philadelphia. And I was always interested in plants, but I never really considered that I could actually make a career out of it. So I first started really getting interested in fruit trees when I was in Alaska back in 1980. And I made several attempts to plant fruit trees up there and then finally succeeded with field-hardened nursery stock that had been grown there for several seasons. That led to going through the Master Gardener program and then going to Washington State University in 1989 to make a midlife career change from petroleum geophysics into horticulture, focusing on tree fruits.
Oh, I see. I didn't realize there had been that shift there and that I should add Pennsylvania to the places where you have experience growing fruit. So what was it that brought you to Alaska and then also to Idaho?
Well, I went through the advanced course of Army ROTC as a graduate student at the University of Virginia, 1969 to 72, and got a reserve commission. And I volunteered for duty in Alaska and went up there in October of 1972 and stayed there after getting out of the active Army in January of 75. And I grew berries for a few years after I bought some real estate. I planted my first apple tree in 1980.
You had also mentioned in past correspondence that you had studied astronomy, right?
Yes, I was at the University of Virginia to pursue a master's degree in astronomy after getting a bachelor's degree in physics in 1969 from the University of Delaware.
Wow, so you've had lots of different lives over your life.
Yeah, I taught astronomy or college-level astronomy courses while I was in Alaska. But I know after 1980, I did not do any more teaching of astronomy, although I did teach a meteorology course once.
Neato. Well, as I mentioned, you've been a mentor to me, and I'm sure you've been a mentor to many others as well. What can you say about your observations and hopes for agricultural and horticultural literacy for our future generations?
Well, it's not going to be easy because, as you know, today's kids are not always allowed to go out and do adventuresome things as mm-hmm. children or teenagers. Some parents are overprotective. Our society has become increasingly urbanized, and many people are like one, two, three, or even four or five generations removed from the farm. So for that reason, there is kind of an obligation on those of us who are in horticulture, agriculture, to educate the younger people about what all is involved. And I can see at the Napa Farmers Market, I can see examples of ignorance on horticultural matters involving fruit sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Not realizing where fruit comes from and how it's grown.
That's right. And I've met people at the farmers market in Napa who have never eaten a plum in their lives, and there are people who have never eaten an apricot. So one of the fun things about going to the market to sell fruit is introducing people via taste samples to things that they've never eaten before or didn't know about.
That's awesome. Or some people might have tasted a plum but just thought it was awful because the ones in the store are not very good.
That's true. As you know only too well, the fruit that's picked in California is picked somewhat green so it can be shipped, and it oftentimes is picked green enough that it will not ripen once it gets to Idaho or Colorado, no matter how long you let it sit in a bowl.
And how long have you been doing the or selling fruit at the farmers market?
I started in 2012. I had a cold storage unit built in my shed back in 2011, a 10 by 10 by 8 foot. And I've sold fruit now at the Homedale Farmers Market, just a few seasons, Caldwell for about 7 or 8 seasons, and then Napa. This is my 12th season there at the Napa Market. So I've seen a lot of customers and tried to earn a good name for quality there at the market.
And do you go every week?
Yes, I do. I try to be, I try never to miss unless something really urgent comes up because my customers expect me to be there.
That's a lot of work. And do you ever do wholesale sales?
Oh, yes. Yes, mm-hmm. I've been selling fruit wholesale to 3 of the stands that Old Fashioned Fruit in Boise operates, and also to Red Top Market in nearby Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
And also I've sold to Reggie's Veggies in Boise and to Red Barn Produce up there in Fruitland, about 30 miles north of where I am here. I've also taken fruit and sold it, well, I don't know if you call it wholesale or resale, down in Elko, Nevada, because I had a good friend down there who became interested in growing fruit trees while he was a working cowboy.
Nice. Well, I remembered the second part of my question. I was wondering what brought you to Idaho when I was asking about the past places you've lived.
Well, I had known a fruit grower here by the name of Garfield Schultz for, I think I met Garfield in 1991, and I learned in 2005 that Garfield had land that he was anxious to sell. And we were living in Minnesota then, and my wife was anxious to move back to the Pacific Northwest, and so was I. So we bought the land from Garfield first for the orchard and then for our home site. And we moved here in October of 2007, and my wife, Connie, found an internet house plan and got a local contractor to build it for us. And it was also, if you don't count Selah, Washington, it was also the first time I'd really had a chance to grow fruit in a Zone 7 climate, because Minnesota had been Zone 4 and Alaska had been basically a zone. Alaska was a Zone 4 most of the time for me, but the problem was lack of heat units in the summer months.
Mm-hmm. And how's the climate there in Idaho?
Well, it's almost ideal. The only thing that's not good about it is that the summers are hotter than they are in central Washington by several degrees, and the nights are warmer, which is also bad for fruit and fruit trees. And we have an infrastructure here for the fruit industry of Idaho. So in that respect, it's somewhat like being in Washington. But in terms of the climate, it's all irrigated agriculture here. There's not enough rainfall in the Treasure Valley to support it. And the other thing here is that the soils we have are desert soils, and they're typically sandy loams that were probably blown in by the wind eons ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they are biologically dead until you begin adding earthworms or compost or mycorrhizae to them.
Mm-hmm. And also drain fast.
Well, yes, that's true.
And so you've been building soil and growing fruit trees since 2008?
Seven.
Did you start planting?
Okay, yes.
Seven, you started planting.
2008.
Mm-hmm. And your orchard is about 1.5 acres?
To be exact, it's 1.2.
1.2. It seems like a lot of tasks between your nursery and the orchard and doing all the propagation and the harvesting. So do you manage to do that mostly by yourself, or are there certain times of year that you rely on some extra labor?
Well, I think the primary time for getting extra labor would be planting grafts and also harvesting cherries or apricots. I have not hired people that much in the past year or two. Typically, I think I've had maybe about, 10 to 30 man hours per year the past year or two of people helping me mm-hmm. with orchard tasks, which is not a lot.
But then your man hours.
Yeah, they're pretty long. That is, even a small nursery and a small orchard, the biggest demand for time is in April and May.
Mm.
And I'm also shipping cyanwood and rootstocks in April
mm-hmm.
and March. So there's a lot of things that are kind of conflicting with each other as demands on my time.
Right. Well, can you paint a picture for us describing your orchard? I'm just wondering, like, what is your tree spacing? What kind of ground cover do you have? Do you have any interplantings or companion plants? Do you mow, that sort of thing?
Yes. The orchard has four rows that run the entire length of the field that's enclosed by the deer fence, and then it has like two rows to the east of there that are three quarters of the length, and then five more that are just like half the length of the field within the deer fence. And the apples and the plums in the first four rows and the apricots are spaced at 18 feet between the rows and 14 feet between the trees in row.
Mm-hmm.
The cherries and the peaches are spaced at 18 by 12, and the pears at 18 by 10, since pears have a more upright growth habit. The apple trees are spaced at 8 by 16, and then the plums and apricots in the newer rows on the east side of the orchard are spaced at 10 by 18.
Mm-hmm.
And after about 10 or 12 years, the trees are starting to get a little bit close together.
Mm-hmm.
And for ground cover, I sowed grass seed back in 2008, 2009, and also more recently. But the biggest weed we have to cope with here is kochia mm-hmm. weed, which has feathery foliage and produces hundreds or even thousands of seeds per plant. And then we also have mallow, also known as butterweed or buttonweed. We have very small amounts of tumbleweed, you know, Russian thistle.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not really tried to do any planting in the tree rows because I have microsprinklers, and I want the ground to be bare so that it doesn't interfere with the sprinklers.
I see. Yeah, we have kochia, and we have mallow, and we have thistle, a lot of the same weeds.
Yeah, those were the same weeds we had in central Washington, too.
Wow. And then what sort of pests, whether there's mammal pests or invertebrate pests and pathogens, well, do you contend with?
The vertebrate pests we have to contend with, we never had any problems with deer until 2018 because we had a deer fence. And then we had about a five-year period when the deer were getting in, so I had to electrify the fence. But with the building of a goat feedlot on the border of our property, we have not had, knock on wood, a deer in the orchard in probably at least 2 years, I'm going to say here. And we have pocket gophers, and they can sometimes damage the root systems of a tree, and mm-hmm. we've had pocket gophers actually kill trees when they were young. So that's the vertebrate pests. For invertebrate, for insects, codling moth is the number one pest on our apples, just as it is everywhere else in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And each twig borer is a minor pest that has the same life cycle as codling moth and will respond to the same insecticides.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have peach tree borer, which has been a minor problem. We do not have western cherry fruit fly on my property, but they have it. It's endemic in Homedale. And we've had some problems with plum leaf curl aphid. But I've found natural ways to control that pest. So that's pretty much most of the pests. You know, we do have, you know, a few yellow jackets. We have a large population of honeybees in the area, so we've never had a problem with getting our trees pollinized.
Good. And I should mention, for any of our listeners interested in growing fruit, there's a great resource called the North American Fruit Explorers. Their website is nafex.org, N-A-F-E-X.org. They're a network of individuals throughout the United States and Canada devoted to the discovery, cultivation, and appreciation of superior varieties of fruits and nuts. You are involved with NAFEX, and I know you've put out several handouts and presentations. When did you get involved with them, and how have you contributed over the years?
Well, in August of 1984, I was kind of thrashing around talking with different Anchorage residents who were trying to, who were growing fruit trees with, or apple trees with some measure of success. And one of them contacted a young building contractor named Richard Rayner. And Rich contacted me, and on a cloudy August afternoon in 1984, Rich talked to me about fruit growing in Alaska and about nurseries and about rootstocks and from that and about catalogs and about the North American Fruit Explorers. And that was kind of like lighting a fuse on my mind, because from that point forward, I became passionate about growing fruit in Alaska and helping other people to do so likewise.
That's great.
I joined NAFEX in a matter of days or weeks, and I think I went to my first NAFEX meeting in 1985, and that was a, I can't remember now where it was, but I very quickly became heavily involved in NAFEX, started writing articles one after the other for Pomona, their quarterly journal, and serving as a board member and officer, and once even as president of NAFEX 1994-96.
Wow.
And attending the meetings pretty faithfully during the late 80s and the 90s and some of the 2000s. And I would say that I would not be where I am today if I had never joined NAFEX.
Wow. Well, now they've transitioned to having their meetings virtually, for better or worse, but I can imagine having the in-person meetings must have been a really great way to network and build connections.
Oh, yeah, it was so much better. And to be frank, I was very active in NAFEX from 1985 to, I think it was 2017. And yeah, I edited the Pomona, you know, as a gathering editor. But since that time, I haven't been nearly as involved because of my computer skills and not liking virtual meetings very much.
Yeah.
And I'm still chair of the NAFEX Apricot Interest Group.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not been to a NAFEX meeting now in about it's probably been about 7 or 8 years. And I just don't have the time to log on and watch a virtual presentation. And I guess you could say that my level of knowledge right now is such that I don't really get very much out of reading Pomona or going to virtual meetings.
Right. But thankfully, you still lend your time so generously to those of us that can use some of your mentorship.
Yes. Well, I know as you get older and more experienced, being a mentor is probably the best thing that a person can do, whether they're involved in horticulture or agriculture or one of the building trades or computers or what have you.
Well, you mentioned that you're chair of the Apricot Interest Group on NAFEX. What is it about apricots that especially stimulates your interest in research?
Well, we had a small apricot tree in our yard in Havertown when I was growing up, and every now and then it would bear a few fruits, and I would eat them, and I really liked them, even though Southeast Pennsylvania is really not a good place to grow apricots. And my parents actually, I didn't like peaches particularly, but they once told me that they were serving peaches, they said that they were apricots, so I ate them gladly. But I had kind of a lingering interest in them that was just kind of below the surface all during the 60s and 70s and 80s. And it wasn't until I was in graduate school at Washington State University that I had a chance to actually see and study apricot trees in detail. All we had in Alaska for much of the 80s was Anchurian apricot seedlings. And then I sold a goldcot tree that I had to a Joe and Alice Brewer in Anchorage. They're now deceased. And the goldcot tree struck root and survived and actually began bearing apricots for them there in West Anchorage.
Cool.
That was quite a thrill to see that happen. But I think the main problem with, well, it's a fairly minor problem with apricots, but heat units is part of it. And with peaches, getting peach trees to harden off their wood in where the summers are cool is really difficult unless they're growing in a greenhouse.
Hmm. Well, I've been endeavoring to grow peaches, so we'll see how they do. In my nursery situation, I'm selling everything before they get to maturity, but my co-host, Jerome Ossentowski, who isn't joining us today, he does have a couple of peach trees at his forest garden at 7,200 feet.
Oh, you say he has peach trees at that elevation?
He does, He doesn't get peaches very often, but they're growing.
And I would assume that he's probably in a zone 5 or warmer?
Depends on the part of his property. At least one of the peach trees is on a south-facing section that also has a rock wall with a little bit of extra thermal mass. So
oh, yeah.
That might
that
be more like a 6.
Vanessa, I have an apricot tree here. It's called the Coffee Pot Road Apricot that Eric Johnson, who I believe lives in, I want to say Boulder, gave me signwood of it, and I think the mother tree is growing beside a road at about, I think it's like at least 8,000, maybe 8,500 feet there, somewhere near Boulder, and this tree is in the nursery right now, and it's about maybe 4 or 5 feet high. It's ready to be transplanted, but I'm kind of anxious to see what the quality of the fruit is like as grown here.
Mm-hmm. Well, one more orchard question, and then I'll shift gears.
Fire away.
So you've mentioned a couple of types of nuts that you grow in your orchard, maybe not on a large scale, but what types of nuts are those?
Well, the nut that's been most successful, I think, is a almond cultivar called Utah Hardy. And Dan Whitney had given me, did side grafts of Utah Hardy and another almond cultivar called Dean in the spring of 2016 onto some Kremsk 86 rootstocks that I had. Well, we had 20 below zero here, which is quite a test for most almonds, in January of 2017, and the Utah hardy grafts survived fine, but all of the Dean grafts were killed. So I still have Utah hardy, and I believe that the apricots and peaches in the orchard are doing the pollinizing, because we have a fairly good crop of almonds on the grafts this year. We probably have, well, I think maybe 30, 40, 50 almonds, something like that.
Wow.
And then the other nut that I have is a Garfield Schultz's dwarf English walnut, which it's the tree is now about 17 years old, and I think the tree is about, 15, 16 feet high. And although the kernels taste good, the nut shells are very thick, so it's quite a job to crack them.
And you're allergic, right?
Yes, I have a food intolerance to walnuts.
So they don't do you any good.
That's right.
Well, if any of our listeners are interested in connecting with Bob Purvis of Purvis Nursery and Orchard, they can visit his website and find his contact information at purvisnurseryandorchard.weebly.com. So Purvis Nursery and Orchard is one word. .weebly, W-E-E-B-L-Y.com.
That's right.
And as we both mentioned earlier, Bob sells fruit, scionwood, grafted fruit trees, and rootstock. He offers grafting and pruning classes for the public, orchard consulting, and custom fruit tree grafting services. He's available to take soil and leaf samples and send them to a laboratory and provide recommendations for ground fertilizer and foliar applications. Bob Purvis, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy nursery and orchard schedule to join us today, and thank you for all you contribute to the agricultural and horticultural community.
You're quite welcome, Vanessa. Have a great day and evening.
Thank you. And thank you also to our listeners for joining us today. I'm your host, Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Tune in next month on KDNK on the third Monday of the month at 4 p.m. for another episode of Living Permaculture. I'll talk to you then.